From KMUW Studios and part of the NPR Podcast Network, this is Books and Whatnot. I'm Beth Golay, host of KMUW's Marginalia Podcast.
And I'm Suzanne Perez, KMUW's resident book reviewer. This podcast was recorded on October 24th, 2024, so any references to new or forthcoming and the like are relative. Hey, Beth.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm just realizing that I didn't have the complete October slump, but I have fewer books than normal.
Oh, that's right. I forgot you had said that last year.
Mm-hmm. And the year before. It's just a thing with me. I don't know what happens.
I wonder if it's because of the school year, sort of getting into the heavy part of reading for your course load.
Maybe, but is this happened even back when I was at Watermark and I wasn't going to school.
Nothing to do with school. That's right. So weird. Well, we always talk about how reading ebbs and flows and there are slumps and it will always come back. So that's okay.
Well, if we had some simulated wood grain around here, I'd knock on that.
Well, we do have simulated wood grain, so we'll knock on that. All right. Well, this month in our bookseller segment, very excited to say that we'll be talking with Harley Hamilton, who is the owner of Red Fern Booksellers in Salina, Kansas. It's a newish bookstore right here in our home state of Kansas. We're going to be really thrilled to talk with him about some of the November releases he's excited about.
Yeah, I'm very excited to talk to him.
Yeah.
The bookstore opened, I believe, like May 2023. So it is very new. It's a baby store.
I know. And it's always nice. I mean, you know, independent bookstores are great wherever they open. But when they're nearish to where you live, it's always an exciting time. So we can't wait to go and check it out in person. So anyway, we'll be talking with Harley later in this episode. So we're going to, I guess, start out like we usually do with our current reads or what we've been reading lately. Beth, why don't you start us out?
Okay, so my first book is called The Bletchley Riddle. It's by Ruta Sepetys and Steve Shanken. This is a new book for young readers. You might recognize Ruta Sepetys and Steve Shanken separately. I mean, they individually write books for young readers. Ruta, I think she has been, I think maybe the last book I interviewed her for was kind of written for adults. But the thing with her YA books, they're all historical fiction, and adult readers love to read them. Steve Shanken also writes books for young readers, and they are all nonfiction. So this is the first time that the two have collaborated on a book, and it's based in, you know, historical nonfiction, but they fictionalized it. And, well, they basically take a deep dive into Bletchley Park, which is the British code-breaking factory in World War II. I mean, I think, you know, some adults might know about it from, you know, like Alan Turing. He's, you know, one of the well-known code-breakers that went through there. But this was just, it was fascinating because they did weave in so much nonfiction that this school, it's in this old mansion, and the people that were there, these young people, they might have been, you know, mathematicians or chess players or what have you, and they were all called in to break the code of the Enigma, which we, you know,
right?
People who have seen Imitation Game know what this machine is. So they fictionalized it. They told this story through a brother and sister team. Jacob, who I believe is 19, and he is secretly working at the school. And then Lizzie, who, you know, is supposed to be sent to America, but kind of escapes and finds her brother. She's trying to solve the riddle of what happened to her mother. And so Jacob is trying to solve the Enigma machine. What I liked about this book is that the authors would take turns with the story. Ruta Sepetys adopted the voice of Lizzie, and Steve Shanken adopted the voice of Jacob.
Oh,
so they were
cool.
Each responsible for their own character.
Yeah.
And it would go back and forth between the two.
So they split the points of view. It's a double point of view
it
novel.
Is. Yes.
Oh, very cool.
Thank you for getting to what I was trying to say for 5 minutes in about 5 seconds.
No, I always love dual or more point of view novels. And I also always wonder how two authors share a book. And I'm glad you found out.
Well, I found out for this case.
Yeah.
Everybody does it differently.
Oh my gosh, I just can't. And every time I see two names on a cover, I'm like, how does that happen?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's a fun read. It's an interesting read. It's, you know, I've learned a lot about history that I didn't know. And as I mentioned before, that, you know, Ruta Sepetys writes these books for YA, but adults seem to like to read them. And this is exactly one of those, although this was written with a co-author, Steve Shenkin. So I highly recommend it if you like fiction, or, you know, it might be a good entree into learning more about the Enigma machine or World War II. But this would be a great book for that. And it's called The Bletchley Riddle by Ruta Sepetys and Steve Shenkin.
Very good. It's going to go on my list. I haven't read a YA or middle grade novel in a while, so I need to rectify that.
There you go. There's one.
All right. Well, my first one this month is Ina Garten's new memoir.
Aww.
I know. It's called Be Ready When the Luck Happens. Ina Garten, of course, well known for her Barefoot Contessa cookbook and television shows on the Food Network. And she's basically a brand, a comfort food brand, let's say. This memoir came out in October, so just recently, and pretty well timed to the 25th anniversary of the Barefoot Contessa cookbook, as
oh,
it turns
interesting.
Out. So kind of a milestone for her and a nice time to reflect on her life. And, you know, all I knew about Ina Garten before I started this book, and I did it on audio, by the way. It's narrated by her. I highly recommend that. But all I knew was what I had seen. Her and her husband, Jeffrey, who are sickeningly sweet to each other. but that's pretty much all I knew, is that, you know, she had some really good chicken broth and an engagement chicken that a lot of couples have made. But this memoir really illuminated her background and her life, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. She had what, you know, a lot would consider a pretty difficult, at least psychologically and emotionally, childhood. She goes into kind of, you know, sort of the stern and somber childhood home she grew up in, and you can see how a lot of, you know, how she approaches life and food and joy and family and friends right now is kind of, you know, a response to that childhood. She goes into her childhood. She goes into how she met Jeffrey. Jeffrey was a Green Beret.
Oh, wow.
I know. If you've ever seen Jeffrey, he's now like the dean of the Yale Business School. So they've had this incredible journey. But the memoir, like many celebrity memoirs, is told in kind of, it's a timeline, but there's also just really vivid episodes of her life. And one of my favorite parts was when she talks about she and Jeffrey were a couple, but they were in between jobs and school, and it was their young adulthood, and they went to Europe. They just spent the entire summer in Europe. This was in the 60s, and this is where she, you know, sort of picked up her passion for food. Mm. It was around the same time Julia Child was there. It was when you could really do Europe on $5 a day. Mm-hmm. They just had a tent and a little camp stove, and she realized the value of really, really good ingredients and fresh seasonal vegetables and all of that. It's a book, I think, that it's going to be a great gift for the holidays, I think, because if you like Ina Garten's food, if you appreciate her, you know, her brand and her food, or if you just appreciate an interesting celebrity memoir, this would be a great read. I really, really enjoyed it. That's Be Ready When the Luck Happens by Ina Garten.
I love that. I love Ina Garten so much. I have so many of her cookbooks, and we'll be, you know, discussing, oh, what's for dinner? Oh, let's make that omelet for two. Which book is it in? Oh, it's in the pink one. No, it's in the orange one. I mean, we
They're
identify
all Ina
them.
Garten ones.
Yes.
She's so great.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's like America's mom or something.
I look forward to listening to that as well.
Yeah, I hope you will.
So my next one is called Blood Test, a Comedy by Charles Baxter. And Charles Baxter is a National Book Award finalist. He was a finalist for The Feast of Love, which is actually a retelling of A Midsummer Night's Dream. And he's, you know, best known for novels, essays, poetry. He has a very impressive backlist. But this one is a comedy. And it's a comedy, but it has like an eerie spin on it. It has this protagonist, Brock Hobson, which is funny that I can remember his name, because no other character in the book could remember his name. And I spoke with Charles Baxter, and he even said, well, I couldn't remember his name either. I kept thinking, what is this guy's name? But he works in insurance, and he weighs risks all day long. He is the most average guy you can think of. His kids like say that he's as predictable as a metronome. So he goes to the doctor for some reason, and somebody comes in and says, would you like to take this blood test? And this blood test, you know, examines his blood, but also his internet history and his responses to a detailed questionnaire, and it comes back and indicates that he's predisposed to commit acts of violence.
What?
And so I don't know if he normally would have been, but just putting the seed in his head, it's really, this is where the comedy comes in, because it's kind of funny to see where this leads him.
The power of suggestion.
Yeah. And Baxter told me he wrote this, he was thinking about this a lot during the pandemic shutdown when, you know, you'd be on your computer all day. And I think he said he was like on Amazon. He said, it's really funny how they say, oh, you like this book. We think you'll like this one and this one and this one. And he noticed all of these internet companies would make suggestions based on his activity. And that's what prompted him to write this book.
Oh, man, that's so true. I mean, it's almost dystopian in a way. There's a lot of books coming out these days that sort of speak to that, like, what if you knew, you know, something about the future? So it's a comedy, but yeah, like you said, kind of a dark side to it.
Yeah, there's some serious things that he's considering. So
I would killing say people.
I would say it's not so funny, but yes, it's a comedy.
All right. And you spoke with him for Marginalia.
I did. And that's available online at kmuw.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like this one.
What's next on your list?
All right. Well, I finally read one of the books of the summer that had been raved about, Long Island Compromise by Taffy Brodesser Ackner. She is the author of Fleischman is in Trouble, which I own but did not read. This one is a chonker of a book. It's, it's for almost 500 pages. Well, 464 pages, according
to me. That's almost 500.
Yeah, I'd say it's on the upswing to 500. I did this one again on audio. It is a dark comedy. I'm glad we're going from comedy to comedy. Okay. This book was laugh out loud funny, but it was so disturbing. It's got a really weird kind of premise. So basically, Taffy Brodesser Ackner has a friend who this initial premise of her novel actually happened to. The novel begins with the kidnapping of a wealthy businessman. His name is Carl Fletcher, and he's the patriarch of this New York Jewish family. He's kidnapped and held for ransom. He's returned to his wife and kids about a week later. Again, I'm not giving anything away. That's the very opening of the book. The rest of the novel explores their lives decades later and sort of the impact of that trauma on everyone in the family. You have son Beamer, who is, what can I say on a family podcast, family-friendly podcast about Beamer? Not much. He's just a really crude person, and he's dealing with the trauma of that day in his own way. His brother Nathan is just paranoid and a hypochondriac and fearful of everything. His sister Jenny has her own, you know, foibles and weird quirks. What it ends up being is this character study of this Jewish family, but their dialogue with each other, the crazy things that happen. I mean, it is really, really far out there, but highly entertaining. It's not everyone's going to like this book. Like I said, there are really, really crude parts to it. There's drug use. There's, you know, all sorts of things going on. But the way this family relates to each other and just all of the horrible stuff that happens to them, some good, some bad, but mostly horrible. The wife is one of those, you know, Jewish mothers who's like wanting to feed everyone and wanting everyone to be happy. And for some reason, especially on audio, this just tickled my funny bone. I would be driving down the street and just laughing out loud. So it made me wonder, first of all, where in the world Taffy Brodesser Ackner gets her ideas, because in the author's note, she was quick to say this was based very, very loosely on something that happened to this friend of mine, but everything else is totally fictionalized, because if I were her friend, I would be like, oh my God, that is not my family. But that is, it's Long Island Compromise by Taffy Brodesser Ackner.
Okay.
Yeah.
So my next one is How Does That Make You Feel, Magda Eklund, by Anna Montague.
What a strange title.
Yes, but it does have meaning and purpose. I just can't tell you what it is.
Okay.
I mean, I could, but that would be spoiling, I think. But this is about a psychiatrist living in New York City. She's approaching her 70th birthday, and She finds out that her best friend, Sarah, had planned a road trip. Well, you know what? Let me back up. Okay. Because when I asked Anna Montague, how would you describe this book? And she said, it's a classic road trip story between friends. It's just that one of them happens to be in an urn.
Oh,
okay. So now let me go back and explain what I was trying to say. Because, you know, Sarah had planned this road trip for the 70th birthday, and then she passes before it can come to fruition. And Magda, who is a psychiatrist and very stoic, and she's going through a lot of grief, and she decides to take the road trip on her own. And she takes Sarah with her because Sarah's husband very quickly moves on and says, the girlfriend really doesn't like the urn in the house. Can you take her for the summer? So that's what starts this road trip, and it starts the healing process. And it's a fascinating look at how a psychiatrist, you know, how the tables are turned and the psychiatrist is in need of assistance. Mm-hmm. But it was, I don't want to say it was a fun read because that would be weird to say that.
It can be. I mean, it's the same as that, like I said, Long Island Compromise. It was disturbing in many ways, but
yeah,
also entertaining. You're talking about grief and, yeah, and trauma and how people deal with that.
It had some interesting characters, some I can't let go of. Mm-hmm. And so I hope she continues to write about them.
Oh, wow. That's a high praise.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm not going to say any more. Go check it out for yourself.
Yeah. Sometimes it's best to go in kind of blind.
How does that make you feel? Magda Eklund by Anna Montague.
Awesome. All right. My next one is one, a holdover from creepy season. I know we're in November now officially, but my October was filled in many ways with some creepy reads. And one of them was Model Home by River Solomon. This is a haunted house tale at its core, but it is also very, very different. It's about, again, like so many horror novels, it's about all of these heavy topics. Here's the setup. It begins with three siblings, and they're called back to their childhood home, which happens to be in a wealthy gated community near Dallas, because the bodies of their parents have been found dead. The police assume that it's a murder-suicide. All the, you know, sort of superficial signs point to that. But the three siblings aren't so sure. They remember really, really scary, creepy things happening in the house, including a ghost that they refer to as Nightmare Mother. Again, really, really creepy. The main character, Esri, is non-binary and neurodivergent, and she recalls several gruesome episodes in the house, some involving dead pets, some disappearing friends, some bathwater tainted with acid.
Ew.
This house is creepy. We know there's something, you know, at least inexplicable going on. But as the novel unfolds, Esri and their siblings are basically forced to confront the reasons that the house is this way. And once again, like you said with your previous novel, I can't say too much about it because so much of the wonder of this book is it unfolding and you figuring out kind of what's going on here. But let's just say it deals with topics like race and class and identity, mental health, like all of these topics, childhood trauma and the effects of that, the legacy of that. Esri is a really unforgettable character. So are her siblings. There's some really, really vivid scenes in here. Fans of horror will love this book, but it is, again, it's kind of horror plus. It's literary horror. Hmm. There's a lot going on beneath the surface, let's just say. And it's got a really great and memorable ending. I enjoyed it. If you like creepy reads, you will too. It's called Model Home by Rivers Solomon.
Wow.
I'm better dealing with creepy stuff these days. I don't know. Maybe my tolerance has built up from Grady Hendrix.
I think mine has diminished.
Yeah, and so a lot of people say that as they get older, they become more sensitive because, you know, you have children and grandchildren, whatever, you worry about them getting hurt. I guess I'm just like, scare me. I'm ready for it.
Okay.
Yeah, or something about this time of year, I guess.
I'm not really going to talk in depth about what I've read, except...
But you're taking that Shakespeare class.
Yeah, I'll mention what I've read for school this month, but
awesome.
I won't say anything much
okay.
about it. So I did, I read a couple versions of King Lear. I don't know if you remember when we talked about Hamlet, that
yes.
there's like the
quartos.
The first quarto and the folio, and that's the same thing with King Lear.
I like that our podcast is also educational.
And I read the sonnets,
yeah,
154.
Oh, wow. All of them?
Well, they're 14 lines long. 154 of them, yes. So I read Country of the Pointed Firs by Sarah Orne Jewett. That was published in 1896.
Ooh.
It takes place in Maine, one of your favorite places.
Oh, love Maine. And never been there, but one of these days.
I also read Cain by Jean Toomer, which was published in 1923, I think, 24, something like that.
How is that spelled, Cain?
It's spelled C-A-N-E, and it's like sugar cane.
Oh, like candy cane.
Or candy cane.
Okay.
More like sugar cane.
Okay.
That's what it's talking about.
Gotcha.
The cane fields.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And I'm in the middle of rereading A Midsummer Night's Dream and Giovanni's Room by James Baldwin.
Of course.
Yeah. So.
Wow, that's a lot of reading for your grad school classes.
It is.
That's great, though.
Heavy sigh.
All right. Well, that brings me to my last book that I'm bringing to the show, which I just finished this morning, actually.
Really?
Uh-huh. It's East of Eden by John Steinbeck.
I'm so impressed.
You know, don't be, because I've been meaning to read this book for at least 20 years. I read Grapes of Wrath several years ago and loved it. Everyone, of course, when you read Grapes of Wrath, the next question you're asked is, oh, but have you read East of Eden? In James Mustick's 1,000 Books to Read Before You Die, it's East of Eden, that is, the John Steinbeck novel.
Oh, okay.
This is, it's so much. It is now part of my identity. I love it. It's so beautifully written. And I just wanted to say that, yes, I had meant to pick it up for at least 20 years, and it is one of the weirdest things how bookish serendipity happens, because I just happened to be shelving some books in my home library, and I pulled it off the shelf for no particular reason other than I wanted to, you know, look at it and flip through it. And I started reading it, and I read the first page, and then I read the second page. And by the second page, there were some passages that I thought were so beautifully written that I was home alone, but I read them out loud to my cat.
Oh, wow. What did Mrs. Maisel say?
She said, meow, meow. No. it was just so pretty. I had to read them out loud and just sort of let the words wash over me. He's such a beautiful writer. This, which I didn't realize until I read it and then read more about it, is Genesis. It's a Genesis story.
Oh, okay.
It is. That's why I asked why how you spelled Cain for that novel, because
right.
It's Cain and Abel, it's Adam and Eve, it's Cain and Abel, it's original sin, it's fate versus free will. This novel follows more or less two families in Northern California. It's based very loosely, from what I understand, on Steinbeck's own family history. But then he really delves into biblical stories with Adam and Eve and Cain and Abel and those brothers. And there are some unforgettable characters in this book, just little bits of wisdom peppered through. And actually, John Steinbeck is the narrator of this novel. It's very strange.
Hmm.
It's not overly noticeable, but as he's talking about his family, you realize that one of the daughters of Samuel Hamilton, who's one of the main characters, is in fact his, you know, John Steinbeck's mother. So anyway, all I have to say about it is, if you have put it off, this is just a beautiful novel, but it has to come to you when you're ready for it. You know, so many classics, you can't really force yourself to pick up a classic and read it. Well, I guess you can if you're in school. But if you're just reading for fun, or, you know, like I do, it really, something has to compel you to mm-hmm. finish a book like that, because it's 600 pages or so. It's a chonker. But by the time I was toward the end of it, I just fell in love with these characters. I didn't want it to end. It also has one of the most vicious evil villains in all of literature, Kathy. So, and people, I don't know if people know that about this book, but she is just terrible.
Huh.
So it's got everything. It's about love. It's about hope. It's about family. It's about everything. It is a book about life. And
wow.
That is East of Eden by John Steinbeck.
You know, I will say that I started talking to my cat as well after reading a book. A book I didn't mention, because I'll talk about it next time, because
okay.
I'm not finished. is Kitten Tits by Holly Wilson.
Can't wait to hear about that. There's a little little prelude to our December issue.
And so my cat's name is Cat Golay, and I started calling her Kitten Tits. And I will say also that you heard me say everything I was reading for school. You heard Suzanne say that she got sucked into the 600-page book and loved it, but got sucked in nonetheless. Which is why I have to say that we challenged each other last month to read to read a book. I'm supposed to be reading There Are Rivers in the Sky. Suzanne is supposed to be reading People of the Book. We failed, but we have not forgotten. So we're postponing that for one more month.
Exactly. It's only postponed, not canceled.
True.
And I am actually really, really looking forward to it. Now that I've finished, you know, I always have a few books going at once. So every time you finish a book, and especially when you finish something as monumental as East of Eden, it's really nice to just pick up something else that's not quite that heavy.
You know? Yeah. Just a completely different genre, different tone, different everything.
Yes. I am really looking forward to picking up a few new books this time around. I look forward to hearing about Kitten Tits next month. I like saying that title. I can't wait to hear all about it.
And I look forward to hearing from Harley Hamilton from Redfern Booksellers in Salina, Kansas. Harley, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Can you tell us a little bit about your store? It's in Salina, which is just north of Wichita. Talk to us about Redfern.
Yeah, so Redfern Booksellers, we're right in the heart of historic downtown Salina, Kansas. If you haven't been to Salina lately, you should come see what all has been happening in our town. Lots of renovations to old buildings, lots of new shops and restaurants. It's really just come to life over the past, 7 or 8 years. I decided to open a bookstore because Salina didn't have one. And as much as I love my friends at Watermark and The Raven, I was tired of driving all the way there from Salina. I was really tired of my old career. I was a pharmacist before this, kind of got burned out, as lots of pharmacists do. The pandemic hit, and being a consultant for nursing facilities got really sad really fast. And then we all ended up working at home. I'm not a work from home person. My house was clean. My work was not getting done. So I decided I wanted this old building that came available would make a perfect bookstore for our town. So May of 2023 is when we officially opened. We did our grand opening in June, and we are just a general bookstore. We've got something for everyone, all ages and all people.
So why did you decide to call it Redfern?
Well, after my favorite book as a kid that got me into reading, Where the Red Fern Grows.
Oh, I love that book as well.
And still to this day, as an adult, you'll see on my staff recommendation table, all my coworkers and booksellers make fun of me because all the books on my table will make you cry.
Oh, I don't know why I'm laughing. Everyone's crying. You have Old Yeller on that table too?
I drew the line there. I do not.
Someone's got to save the dogs.
Okay, so you're
my dog works with me here part-time. Yeah, his name's Ollie. He's a border collie. He has his own table of recommendations. Where the Red Fern Grows will be on that table, too.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, all the dog books are usually on his table.
Okay, so you're talking with us about books you're excited about, whether it's coming out this month in November or, you know, just slightly before. We're giving you a little bit of leeway there. So what are you excited about right now?
Well, thank you. There's a few that I'm really excited about. Okay, who remembers Braiding Sweetgrass?
Oh, yeah.
I do.
Okay, well, the new book, The Service Berry, is coming out in November. We're super excited for that one. It's just about abundance and reciprocity in the natural world. I think it's a good time for everyone to read this book and be grateful for what we have. The other one that I'm really excited about is Cy Montgomery's new book, What the Chicken Knows. Are you familiar with Cy Montgomery?
So the first book was about an octopus, right?
Yeah, so there was Of Time and Turtles, The Soul of an Octopus, The Secrets of an Octopus, The Hummingbird's Gifts. Now we have What the Chicken Knows. And I think this is going to be great for my store here in Salina, Kansas. I know lots of people with chickens.
There's a lot of chicken farmers right here in the city limits of Wichita these days, too. So that's going to have wide appeal.
Yeah, I got to meet Cy at one of the book conferences that I went to once. I stood in line for a really long time to say hello and have her sign one of my books. And that's all there was to it because the line was so long, I didn't want to hold it up. But I could have chatted for a long time.
Wow.
I have to give a shout out to a book that I'm super excited to read because I read the first two just like that. Are you familiar with Benjamin Stevenson? Everyone in my family has killed someone, followed up by everyone on this train is a suspect.
Yeah, so I'm familiar with the books. I have not read them, but they are super popular.
Okay, well, stop what you're doing and go read them right now.
Okay, yes, sir.
Everyone in my family has killed someone was so clever and so witty, and he writes to you, the reader, and he even tells you who's going to die on what page, well, not who, but when someone is going to die. And then when that happens, he'll have a comment in there in parentheses, like, see, I told you on page 67, someone was going to die. It is a whodunit, Agatha Christie style. There are rules that he has printed in the front of the book for how to read a mystery novel and try to solve the crime. You will not figure it out.
Wow.
There's nothing worse than when you figure it out a book halfway through. His second one was a follow-up to that called Everyone on This Train is a Suspect. And this is for my readers, my writers, publishers. All book people will love this one because it is a group of publishers and writers who have entered a competition, and they are all on a train together, and the bodies just start dropping. So, really fun read. He has a novella coming out called Everyone This Christmas Has a Secret.
Oh,
wow.
And it's only 170 pages. It's a quick, fun holiday read.
I love novellas at holiday time. And I also love how you said all the bodies start dropping and we just start laughing. What's up with us today? Jeez.
That is exactly what Benjamin wants you to do when you read his book.
Well, it seems like he really has fun with the genre, and it's really like
Absolutely.
something different, which I just love. So I will definitely have to check that out. But yes, novellas at holiday time and holiday themed stories that aren't a huge commitment when you're so busy around the holidays, that's an excellent idea.
I can tell you what I'm currently reading.
Oh, we would love to know what you are currently reading.
Okay, so I am reading Playground by Richard Powers.
Excellent. I call that one the understory.
Okay, so that has crossed my mind too because the Overstory was one of my favorite books. And I'm so excited when this came out. I did not have a chance to read it until I just picked it up this weekend. So I'm only about 100 pages into it, but it is every bit as good as the Overstory.
So you're really liking it. Is it similar? I mean, is it like, obviously the Overstory is about trees. This one's about the ocean. Is it very similar style though?
It is a very similar style. That's why I love the Overstory so much. I love books that have lots of characters, lots of time frames, time periods, and you don't really understand what's going on until you finish it. And then even when you finish it, you might have to think about it for a little while before you really know what happened.
That's the best. I love that. Do you read mostly literary fiction? Is that kind of your jam?
Most of the time.
Okay, cool.
Yeah,
Well,
I
we'll
kind of
get
get
along
stuck in
great.
World War II historical fiction forever. I couldn't get out of it, and I keep going back to it. Did you read The Postcard? That was one of the best books I've ever read.
Okay.
So now I'm kind of getting back to World War II.
Yeah, well, there's always plenty of them, so.
Yeah.
That is a genre unto itself, World War II historical
It was a hard
fiction.
war to get out
It
of as
was.
well.
There's a lot to write about. All right. Well, this is great, Harley. Thank you so much for joining us today. This has been fantastic. I can't wait to visit your store, and it will be very soon, I assure you.
Well, thanks for having me today. I hope to see you all here soon.
All right. Well, that sounds like a great place to stop. So until next time.
Keep turning those pages.
Bye, Beth.
Bye, Suzanne.
Books and Whatnot is a production of KMUW Wichita. Our team of engineers, producers, editors, and hosts are Mark Statzer, Torin Anderson, Haley Krausen, Jonathan Huber, Luann Stevens, Carly Cooper, Beth Golay, and Suzanne Perez. You can reach us by email sent to podcasts@kmuw.org, on Twitter @BooksAndWhatnot, and on Instagram, books_and_whatnot. Find more conversations and a list of books discussed in this episode at kmuw.org.
No matter what happens in Washington, the NPR Politics Podcast is here for you. For the latest news, insights, and analysis from the election and beyond, listen to the NPR Politics Podcast.